What's up? This is Movies On Up. You're invited somewhere timeless. A man not needing an invitation or an introduction is my co-host, Mr. Dave Becella.
The timeless one. That's my nickname.
That's Mr. Dave, the timeless one, because he has no idea how to tell time or how time works. That's Mr. Dave. I am Ryan. We are Movies On Up. You're invited somewhere timeless is our tagline for this week. If you think you know what movie that comes from, send your guest to us in one of the following ways. You can email us moviesonup@gmail.com. You can leave it on our Facebook page, facebook.com/moviesonup, or Twitter @moviesonup if you are correct. And if we choose you, it won't take a long amount of time for a prize package to show up at your doorstep. The prize that you all get this week is our first of the movie episodes that we're going to be doing for October, the month of Halloween. We've got four planned. We're only going to do four, so it's not like there's one maybe surprise. That's not how this works. This week, it's Goosebumps. Next week, we'll be doing John Carpenter's Halloween, followed by Suspiria, and then It. The first three are all getting either remade or sequels, and then It was a movie that, spoiler alert, we both like a lot. Keep a ear open for that when we get to our list of our favorite horror movies from 2017. But it was also a movie that we both saw very late in the year and probably didn't talk about it as much as we should have, being that we both like it an awful lot. You may even find that in our code number one spots for that list. A movie that you may find on one of our 2015 lists, whenever we drop that, is Rob Letterman's Goosebumps, starring Jack Black, Dylan Minnette, Odeya Rush, and Ryan Lee. The movie opened in first place with $23.6 million on October 16th, 2015. The Martian in its second week was number two with $21 million, followed by Bridge of Spies, Crimson Peak, both in their opening week. Another kids horror-ish movie, Hotel Transylvania 2, rounded out the top five for that week. Goosebumps went on to gross $80 million domestically, which puts it in 940th place on the all-time domestic list, one small jump below this 2008 movie starring Darth Vader.
I don't know enough Hayden Christensen. Oh, Jumper.
Yes.
Yeah.
These are probably the best two hints I've ever given on this show. That is one of them. And just out of reach of this 2012 Tom Cruise action flick.
Jack Reacher.
Jack Reacher, indeed. Last year's Tom Cruise bomb, The Mummy, sits at 936th place all-time, also around $80 million, while the 1976 Streisand Christofferson, A Star is Born, sits five spots below in 945th place, just to give you an idea of some context there. Goosebumps earned another $70 million worldwide for a gross of over $150 million. We don't generally talk about worldwide gross because it we just stick with domestic stuff because we're America first.
The 400 million copies sold worldwide is pretty impressive.
They do mention that from time to time in this movie. And, you know, on a $58 million budget, you don't have to know that a sequel's coming out, although we have mentioned that to you, to realize that there was probably some more meat left on that bone. It becomes kind of a financial equation at that point.
You know what? I don't mind. I like this movie. I legit really like this movie.
This movie is not for me. Whether or not I like it or love it doesn't really matter. But I was impressed with the idea to adapt not a single book, but an anthology of stories that, except for the Monster Bloods 1 through 38, however many of those they did, none of these books or stories have anything to do with each other. But to adapt them and work them all into a single narrative sounds like it would be a really bad idea. But the writers, Darren Lemke, Scott Alexander, and Lara Krzyzewski, I think did a really good job of doing that.
Yeah, I mean, it's set up. R.L. Stine, books written on that typewriter, they come to life if they're unlocked. That's the setup. And it was done really well. I mean, he's done a million books. You know, I didn't read a lot of R.L. Stine growing up. But, you know, you had the poodle, you had the werewolf, you had the giant bugs. I don't remember writing about giant praying mantis. Oh, now I remember. Like, yeah. I like it. And Jack Black kind of felt like he was shoehorned in here. I may mention in the 2015 episode that I feel like there was enough in this movie they didn't need Jack Black, but they lacked the confidence and felt like they needed to have Jack Black. He doesn't detract from it. there's times where he's really, really funny in this movie. There's times where he's really chewing the scenery and like really overdoing it, but it doesn't take away. It fits.
Deciding that you're going to have a world in which R.L. Stine exists, these books exist, and the narrative involves pulling all of them together into the real world, I think you did sort of have to have that character. When this movie was coming out, I'm curious how they do this more than anything. When I found out they were going to adapt a Goosebumps book, they were going to try and, I don't want to say shoehorn, that's unfair, but they were going to try and put a lot of the monsters in. I thought, I don't know how well this is going to turn out. Really, I give Letterman a lot of credit. I give the writers a lot of credit because I feel like this is an idea that should not work.
You had a good word there, shoehorn, which I used as well. But
so you had a good word that I stole from you.
No, in your context, it was better. Because
no, you.
It would be very easy to just shoehorn monsters in and throw in nods and fan service here. And I feel like when it came to the monsters, they didn't do that. It's very consistent. You have your werewolf that they make a character. It's not just a cameo. The poodle has its purpose. The gnomes, the praying mantis, and then it's all carried together by Slappy, which I thought was done very, very well because Slappy's in this 10 minutes, 5 minutes, but he's the star of the movie.
He's like the Hannibal Lecter.
He is the Hannibal Lecter of this movie.
Every movie has to have a good antagonist, and choosing of all the monsters or whatever from Goosebumps book, choosing Slappy to be that guy, I think is a good choice. I don't know the entirety of the Goosebumps oeuvre, so I couldn't suggest a better one. But I mean, I thought Slappy was good. And I guess everyone probably has their favorite Goosebumps book. I mean, you didn't read a ton of them. I think I read about the first 24. I certainly remember Night of the Living Dummy. And what I did think was fun for me was to look at the various monsters and try and recall what book they came from to see if your favorite made the list. And mine, I think, was like The Haunted Mask. That was my favorite Goosebumps book, and I don't think I saw that. Seeing the Werewolf of Fever Swamp and the Praying Mantis from Shocker on Shock Street.
Didn't throw them in there just for fan service. And everything that showed up had its purpose. The snowman had its purpose. Was Snowman of something
the
county?
The abominable snowman of somewhere in California.
Yeah. The gnomes. Like, everything had its purpose. It didn't overdo it with the monsters. They show up there at the end and everything. Invisible Boy, I thought, was done well. Like, yeah. He was fun. It paid a great tribute to the book while still making an entertaining movie.
One of the best uses from one of the Goosebumps characters was Hannah. I thought that was fantastically well done. And I read The Ghost Next Door. You know, I was familiar with that storyline, but I didn't put two and two together that, oh, that girl's name from a book I read 20 years ago was also Hannah. So when that turns out that that's the character from that book, I was like, holy shit, that's really good.
That was very clever.
That's well, and if you, it's better if you know the plot of that book, which I had to go back and look at. Then I was like, man, tip of the cap to you
guys.
But
even if you don't, it's just you have this guy who he wrote these characters and created these monsters, and he keeps them locked away in a book. He moves a lot. So, like, yeah, it would make sense for him to want to have somebody there.
Oh,
and
it certainly does. She's got her own book, too. Like,
yeah. And the thing is like, it helps when you get good actors in there that aren't just, like, young faces. Dylan Minnette is a quality actor. I really like that kid. I liked him before this. I still like him. A Day of Rush, I thought, did really well in that role. Champs, just, he does what he's supposed to do. Like, I'm not going to rave about his acting, but he does exactly what he's in that movie to do. He's the early 2000s Jack Black of this movie, where he's just there to make you laugh. And those four are the core, them and Jack Black, who I think did really, really well. The casting in this movie, I guess, is what I'm getting at, is that they didn't just go for young, pretty faces. Like, they put good actors in there. And then even for the smaller roles, they put really funny people in. Ken Marino, Timothy Simons, Jillian Bell. They put really, really funny people in there, even though they're in small roles. And then you have Amy Ryan, this great actress, who's just the mom. So, like, yeah, okay, that's why the budget may be a little higher than it needed to be, but I think it paid off because at no point did it come off as just cheap.
Yeah, and nobody felt like they were phoning it in, you know, that was like Amy Ryan, you could see, like, Okay,
it's
maybe
a downgrade for Amy Ryan.
It is.
For what Amy Ryan can
but
do.
But she didn't do that. No. And Dylan Minnette, at that point in his career, a job's a job. It's not a downgrade for him. But the kid is really talented. And to me, it showed in here, this is Dylan Minnette giving it his A game. Maybe the script is a little silly. Maybe the movie, I don't want to say didn't deserve that, but the kid has got one speed and he was giving it his best try. And like you said, him and Odeya Rush, I think, and we'll throw Ryan Lee in there too, they would have been capable of carrying this movie without Jack Black, absolutely, because of how talented specifically Minnette is and how well the other two did their job. But the most recognizable name in the movie, or maybe even the two most recognizable names, all belong to Jack Black and maybe the character of R.L. Stine himself. And heading into the movie, I'm not sure, like you said, that this needed to be a Jack Black vehicle. I think Goosebumps will bring people in. You don't need a Jack Black Goosebumps
and
movie.
And that's what I mean, is I don't mean that the R.L. Stine character didn't need to be there.
Yes.
I don't think you needed to make it
that,
a Jack Black vehicle.
Right.
And I don't want to take away from him. I thought he did really good. I thought the way he played it was fun, and especially like stuff in the grocery store, like with him in the buggy, I thought was good. He played it Jack Blacky when he needed to, and it worked.
Having that character of R.L. Stine be central to the plot. Okay, you have to cast him. Well, who do you want to cast? And I think at that point, you cast an actor that kids like. I think the movie was marketed more as a Jack Black movie, and maybe that wasn't marketing towards kids. That was marketed towards us.
And that's what I mean. It didn't need to be a Jack Black movie. I have no problem with him being in it. But
yeah. Kids, I don't think, are going to see it for Jack Black, but they're like, okay, well, we got to have this character. He's going to be kind of funny. Who are kids going to laugh at? Oh, Kung Fu Panda. And they were right, and I think that's fine. What I am interested in is when you spin it forward to the sequel, the screenwriters had two scripts basically done. One of which would have R.L. Stine and the other would not have him. And it looks like we're getting something closer to the second script, as somehow Jack Black is coming back as R.L. Stine. But you watch the trailers, you don't see any mention of that character. So I think that maybe they realized that after making the movie, the stars of a Goosebumps book was the monster.
See, I was curious. I wasn't sure how much he's in the second one. I didn't know if he's just coming back to voice Slappy or...
He's not. He's not voicing Slappy at all.
He wasn't even in this one?
He did in this one, in the first one, yeah. But he's not voicing Slappy in the second one. He's only playing R.L. Stine.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
So it makes me think he's not going to be in it that much at all. Maybe he just comes in at the end. Personally, I'm kind of hoping for a ghost R.L. Stine. I think that would be really neat.
I mean, the second one just looks like what the first one could have been without him.
Yes.
And it looks like it's following the same kind of thing where it's you have funny people, Chris Parnell, Winnie McClendon Covey, Ken Jeong. You have funny people in there, different kind of funny, maybe less understated, more overt.
Yeah.
They'll be less subtle, but I like the first one enough. I will see this.
I'm not going to run out to see it.
I like the idea of Slappy as like...
But I won't avoid it.
Like the idea of Slappy as this new horror icon. Because, you know what? He was good.
I mean, he's a dummy.
When Jillian Bell gets to the police station and the thing rolls up and he's got the little cop glasses. I love that scene. I really do.
The character was fun. I liked Slappy better than most of the monsters that were in the movie. I thought the CGI was one thing that really let me down in this. You got a budget of $53 million, and I know a lot of that probably did go to the actors. But if you're going to have, and I don't know, maybe I'm splitting hairs here, but you're going to have a werewolf character. I think that could have been done practically.
And you could have kicked him in the nards.
You could have, because we all know Wolfman's got nards. But maybe a practical werewolf would have been too scary for kids. And at the end, I do have to remind myself that this is a kid's movie.
Because even the aliens, the freeze aliens, they could have been practical.
The zombies were. And I thought the zombies looked pretty good. I liked that a lot. Maybe you can't.
Like if you spend the budget on the CGI budget on the snowman and the praying mantises.
Yes.
The gnomes, or you just get a bunch of little Kevin Smiths. There were chances for practical effects, but it wasn't that kind of movie, I guess.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing tonally when you look back at Goosebumps stuff. And it's been 25 years since I've read a Goosebumps book. But I was sitting on the couch talking to Sarah about it. She had already seen the movie, but she just humored me and watched it again. Her recollections of Goosebumps were much scarier than the movie presented themselves to be. And I kind of remember them as being, it's not going to make you piss yourself. It may give you goosebumps, but that's about it.
See,
but
I was a scary stories to tell in the dark. Like, that's what I read, and those are legit terrifying.
Yes, those are terrifying. And then it made me think of, like, the lesser trilogies, the scariest stories you've ever heard. Those are the ones that had the old witch lady on the front. And then the stories for the Midnight Hour books, there was three of those too. They're all anthology horror stories, but each of those three books, those stories were all shorter than one Goosebumps book, but I do remember those being terrifying. They're making a scary stories movie, and I don't know exactly the way they're going to go. Are they going to make it an anthology, or are they going to try and Goosebumps it up? But I would think that tonally, I think they got the Goosebumps movie right. That is for kids. It's a little bit lighter. It's slightly campy, although there are some, when he says at the end, there's three parts of a book, the beginning, the middle, and the twist. The twist that Stein put in those books sometimes was a bit heavier than others, but for the most part, you know, I thought they were light kids' books that were a little bit scary, but they weren't going to give you nightmares.
Just like the TV show, Goosebumps
TV
show.
Which I never watched.
Yeah, Ryan Gosling was on the camera episode. Yeah, like those.
Man, that kid was all over anthology horror shows.
They were scary enough. I really liked it. I think there's a spot for family horror or horror for kids, and it doesn't get filled all that much. So if we can get a franchise that's going to do that, I'm all for it. Get kids interested in horror with kids' horror movies. They grow up to like good horror movies, and then they make good horror movies. So.
With the amount of Goosebumps books there are, you have a lot of source material. And I think that the writers were able to hone in on what made those books fun, and they were able to kind of put that in the movie. I mean, you know, like we said, this movie isn't for me as an adult horror fan, but as an adult that read the books as a child, I can appreciate that in it. And I think if you're a kid that's, I don't know if they're still making Goosebumps books or if that's still a thing with kids nowadays. I don't know. I don't have any
kids.
He
looked pretty old at the end of the movie. The R.L. Stein cameo.
Oh, yeah, he did.
He's an old dude.
Yeah, but I don't know if kids are still reading these books.
Too busy teaching drama.
But yeah, but if they are, I could see where if you were a kid reading these books and you were a kid watching the movie, that I think you would have. Your kids liked it, right?
They've watched it more than I have.
Yeah.
They enjoy this movie a lot.
And Tally likes it, despite the fact that it's the zombies aren't really scary. They don't eat anybody. She's still okay.
Tally's into it. She's the one that likes it the most.
On the one hand, I guess it's surprising, but on the other hand, it's not. She likes horror. This is a horror movie that's made maybe for somebody even a little bit older than her.
Because it was on Netflix for a long time when we didn't do an episode
on it. Of course,
yes. I'd catch them watching it, mostly Tally. Like, she would just put it on and just watch it. So, yeah, they like it.
It took me 3 years to watch the first one. I don't think it'll take me 3 years to watch the second one. If I see it on somewhere, yeah, I might throw it on just to give it a try. But to be honest, I think that does actually say probably more about this movie than anything else I've said on the show is there's no reason to avoid it. There's no reason to.
It's enjoyable. It's
right.
fun.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
a fun movie because I don't think it panders too much to kids either. It doesn't pander to R.L. Stein fans. I don't think it panders. Like, it's a straight down the middle, just fun, enjoyable experience.
It's commercial. Like, everybody can watch it. Nobody's going to be offended. The movie's made to be enjoyable and make money. And they did that. They succeeded. Now it'll be interesting to see moving forward. You don't have Jack Black. We've already done this. Is the money there for the sequel? I don't know. I mean, expectations. It's sequelitis. Sometimes the sequels do much better, and other times they don't quite reach it. I think this is going to be one of the ones that doesn't quite reach it.
I don't think it will.
No.
But I think it'll be fun.
Fair enough.
Not as fun as the first one, but I think it'll be worth a watch, I think.
Speaking of movies that don't quite
hold up,
well, that don't hit the heights of the first one, next week we're going to have our 2015 list, which may or may not include Goosebumps, but will certainly include a movie that the sequels have never reached the height of, Halloween. I was just reading an interview that John Carpenter gave while he was promoting Starman, where he actually called Halloween 2 an abomination. We're not doing Halloween 2.
We have done Halloween 3 in the past.
Which John Carpenter likes an awful lot. But we are going to do the original Halloween in preparation for the John Carpenter produced Halloween movie that will be out next week. So stick with us. Come on back. We're about halfway through Halloween month. I think things really start to kind of pick up. We've got a good list, and 15-16 is really good too. We've got a couple, and then we have three really, really good, more traditional horror fare movies for the rest of the month with Halloween, Suspiria, and It. Some all-time classics. So come on back next week and let's talk some more horror. But until then,
keep it up.